For the low, low price of $91 million, Louisiana State University has secured Lane Kiffin as the head football coach. He has taken reins officially. There's a story at WWL.com about that very specific thing. But Lane Kiffin made news last week. This cracks me up. It really does. Lane Kiffin made news last week because his daughter, whose name is Landry, posted a video on TikTok that shows her father, Lane Kiffin, Coach Kiffin, coming back home from the grocery store carrying a black handbasket, like the kind that you get when you walk into the grocery store. Not the push cart, not the buggy, but like the handbasket with the two little handles that flip up, and it's full of groceries. And his daughter, Landry, asks him, "Dad, what are you doing with that basket?" And he turns around, he looks at the camera, says, "What? They make you pay for the bags." So he just took the basket with him. And so this has been kind of divisive on the internet. People are like, man, this guy's pretty wealthy. What's he doing not being willing to pay for these grocery bags? Which, I don't know, I didn't get that sense of it. And then, you know, Lane Kiffin himself posted on on social media, he's like, hey, this is not a big deal. Like, I took the basket back to the store. I'm not some totally entitled centimillionaire who thinks he shouldn't have to pay 10 cents for a plastic bag. I think he just didn't want to pay for the bag. And he's like, why would I do that when I can just take the basket home, empty the groceries into my refrigerator, and then take the basket back to the store?
So wait, did he take it back to the store?
He says he took it back to the store. I can't independently corroborate that. I'm just some guy on the radio. But if he says he took it back to the store, that's good enough for me. And I'm thinking, like, I don't know, I'm sure the grocery stores don't want you doing that because they would probably lose a lot of those baskets. But that's a pretty easy way to cut down on like plastic bag waste. If that's the thing you care about, which I'm, you know.
I believe he's going to have Lane privileges, meaning that they will let him get away with it because it's Lane. But also that might start a trend called laning where people just take baskets home and bring it back.
Yeah.
My whole thing is, why would Landry put it on TikTok? Why don't snitch on your people,
Why would you do that? I think, he later told ESPN, he was like, Landry was not supposed to post this. She said she wasn't going to put that video up. So I think Landry was probably got a little stern talking to at home. He's like, I'm not just the dog catcher here. You know, no disrespect to dog catcher, but I got kind of high profile job. I got to keep a lot of different people happy. I got to be respectable in the eyes of my employees and the guys who play for the Tigers. You can't go posting that. But,
So, spitballing here, how much do you think the groceries cost if he was able to carry it in one little bag?
It looks like a bottle of bleach. I think I see a dozen eggs, something green, maybe looks like a dark leafy green, maybe spinach or kale. Something else in maybe a liter. It might be a Coke bottle or soda water or something. I don't know.
So in this economy, around $90?
Yeah, it's probably, $90 to $100 just for the bleach. No, I mean, realistically, this can't be more than $50 worth of stuff.
I've never been in one of those grocery stores where they make you pay for a bag. How much is it usually?
I think it's usually 10 cents a bag.
I can swing that.
You can swing that, certainly. I mean, you'd spend 10 cents on stupider stuff than that. I mean, look, I can see, if you're buying groceries for the whole month and you got 50 bags, like, okay, that's $5 that you probably would have liked to keep. But for Lane Kiffin, I mean, he's talking about, 20, 30 cents here. But let him take the basket.
I can't see the basket from here, the one that he took, but I'm quite sure it's sturdier than the bag that was going to sell him for 10 cents.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe, if he kept the basket, he could use it again for something. I saw something, I won't go on and on about this because I want to get to these calls, but keep a laundry basket in your car and put your groceries, don't bag them at all. Like, go through the checkout, just put all the groceries right back in your basket, just the way that you put them in when you got them off the shelves. And then when you get out to the car, take them all out of the buggy and put them in the laundry basket in your car, return the buggy. And then when it's time to go in, you just take the whole laundry basket out of the trunk and bring it inside.
that sounds like a good idea, but my neighbors are nosy and they might see I have like a cup of sugar. He just got some sugar and they're going to come over and like, I just saw you brought sugar inside because I can see through the holes in the basket. Can I borrow some sugar?
I don't think they're going to come for your sugar. They're going to come for your Jägermeister, Coleman.
Nobody wants the Jägermeister.
They're going to go party with Coleman. Let's get some calls in here, guys. Thanks for your patience. We'll start in Michigan. Paul, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Ian, Happy New Year. I wasn't expecting to get home ec advice.
And to you as well. What's going on today, man?
I appreciate it. All right. If your inner circle cannot convince him that you can't reduce the prices by 600%, it makes us the laughing stock of the world.
Yeah.
And say what you want about Biden, but at least the people that he had surrounding him were more of an expert on their duties.
I think you hit the nail on the head here, Paul. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you won't catch me defending Biden. You know, the whole dementia thing is falling asleep. He's losing track of where he is and waving at people off camera. That was a learning moment for all of us. But it is inevitable. You cannot argue that he was surrounded by competent public officials. And the rest of the world saw it that way, and that's not the situation that we're in right now.
Unfortunate.
Well, the world will just keep turning. 2026 will be full of adventures, won't it, Paul?
I just hope the pendulum swings fast. So,
yeah,
we'll see. Good luck to all of us.
Yeah, indeed. All right, be good, Paul. Happy New Year. Let's go to Gregory in Metairie. Gregory, go ahead, brother. Welcome back.
And nice to talk to you again. Happy New Year, of course. Scoot must be in Portland, huh?
I'm not sure where he is. I haven't spoken to him since Christmas. I don't know if he skipped town or not.
I didn't want to pry. Hey, this guy, I wanted to talk about something else, but this new coach for LSU.
Yeah.
Guy Broussard, I inadvertently walked out one of those black little carry baskets, and then I remember what I did, and I just, I ran back. But, I was just in a hurry,
Sure.
And I had quite a few items, but your thing about the laundry basket, I'm going to do that.
Hey, yeah. I'm not just some dumbass with the microphone. I got some good ideas over here, Gregory.
Yeah, that's why I call you. That's why I admire you. We don't agree on a lot of stuff, but I do love you, brother.
I love you back, man. Yeah, go ahead.
On your first hour, you were talking about Causeway Coin and about what Silver's going through. And I really like that guy because I had known that Silver was going to go through the roof a long time ago. About three, maybe 4 years ago, we had to clear out my family's home. My father passed away, and then almost a year to a date, mine was gone too. And part of my settlement, my parents were very generous. I didn't know how wealthy that my great-grandfather and my grandfather were. There was all this silver. I do remember it as a child, at Thanksgiving and Christmas time. I got over 250 pounds of sterling silver in candelabras, silverware, flat. Oh, yeah.
Brother.
It's all mine. And I went to Causeway Coin. The guy was so nice. He says, listen, Mr. Brown, this stuff is very valuable. You'd be better on the auction market. I mean, I'll give you the money it's worth in silver weight. And that was several years ago. Maybe a year and a half ago?
Uh-huh.
And he gave me good advice. Hold on to it. Bring it to an auction. Go to an auction site. You're going to get, because I'm talking about candelabras, trophies that my great-grandfather won.
Wow.
Yachting on Lake Pontchartrain. I'm not kidding you. From 1880. And I had always seen those trophies growing up. Yeah, and then trophies for golf, too. Oh, golly. And that was my grandfather himself in the 1920s. So I got silver going back from 1880 up into the 40s. And not to mention all the little knickknacks, goblets. I mean, I'm talking about tour. I got boxes and boxes of this stuff. My brother didn't want it. He said, I don't have any need for that. And I said, I guess I'll take it. Blah, blah, blah. It's still wrapped in Excelsior and stuff like that. But I showed a few pieces to the guys at Causeway Coin, and he's like, I'd be glad to buy it for you, but all I'm going to do is melt it down.
Yeah, I would be curious to know, what the melt value would be versus a collector would want for the silver.
It's over $80 an ounce now. It's just over $80 an ounce.
I just looked it up, Gregory, and I don't know if you're sitting down or not, but 250 pounds of silver is worth about $263,000 today.
I knew it.
So I'm glad for you, man. Send us a fruit basket in the next year, Gregory. Have a happy new year, man. I got to move on here. Thanks for listening. Let's go to Jack in River Ridge. Jack, you're on the air.
Ian, happy new year.
And to you as well, brother. What's on your mind today, Jack?
Well, I just want to comment on some of the things you've been talking about, about Trump. Look, I just want to challenge people for the new year to stop approaching this as though you were rooting for your team, the Saints against the Falcons. And look, it's stop just watching whatever guy that you follow on social media, whether it's Hannity or whoever you Newsmax. Because look, I have relatives too. They sit down there, they watch Newsmax, they watch Fox, and whatever comes out of their mouths, they believe it. They never question it. You simply have to know at this point that he's lying to you. And honestly, that's not his fault. That if you're still supporting Trump at this point, that's your fault. Okay. Because he couldn't make it more obvious than he does.
And, he's not really trying hard to keep it up a secret anymore, is he?
No, he's not. And look, I'm gonna let you go because I realize you want to end the year on an uptick. But look, did you happen to see the Wicked? The last installment.
The what?
Wicked.
Wicked. The set. What is it? For good? No, I haven't seen that yet. I was supposed to see it a couple weeks ago, and something got screwed up. What's that about?
Okay, well, there's a scene in the movie that will remind you of Trump. At least it reminded me of Trump.
Okay.
The Wicked Witch is...
Oh, no spoilers now. Wait,
no spoilers now, Jack.
Wait, hold on.
Look, this isn't going to spoil anything. But she's threatening the wizard, Jeff Goldblum, that she's going to prove to the people that he has no real power.
Yeah.
Okay. And Jeff Goldblum looks at her and says, "When you've been running a scam as long as I have, there comes a point where the truth just doesn't matter. And until these people start to feel a little more pain, unfortunately, I think that's what it's going to take before they wake up."
Yeah. Yeah, man. Jack, thank you so much for that commentary, man. Thank you, and happy new year to you. I did want to say one more thing before we step away real quick, and Jack kind of touched on this, and I said this to somebody that I met when I was in Concord last week at a party, and I was telling them about what I do and why I think it's important, and I told to them, I get on the air and I say what I think is true, and I try to be humble about it. And I try to invite people into a conversation not based on, are you a Trump supporter or not? Are you a liberal or are you a conservative? Are you a Democrat or are you Republican? Where I try to meet people is, do you want to live in fantasy or reality? Because that tends to get a cleaner result. Like there is no sort of instant recognition of partisanship there. It's not about ideology. It's simply, do you want to live in a place of truth or do you want to live in a place of fantasy? And if that's how we begin these conversations, I think we'll get farther both with each other in these conversations, in these debates, and as a country. Because I have never met anyone that said I would prefer to stay in the Matrix. You know what I mean? We'll get a look at traffic with Ian Ozan. Hey, that's different. And when we come back, we'll be talking to a man named Robert Lawless. He's going to talk to us about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is in pretty bad shape heading into 2026. It is one of the few federal agencies that actually turns a profit and returns money to the United States taxpayers. So why is the Trump administration trying to destroy it? We'll talk about that and much more after this. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. He'll be back on Monday. I'll be back right after this. Stick around. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Maybe you've never heard of it before. That's okay. This agency's entire job is to stop banks and credit card companies and payday lenders and debt collectors from screwing over people like you and me. And it has been hanging on by a thread for months. The White House has been trying to shut it down. Without Congress's approval, one of the main architects of Project 2025 is the acting director of the agency. We are going to get some detail from this with Professor Robert Lawless, who's a professor of law and co-director of the Illinois Program on Law, Behavior, and Social Science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Professor, welcome to the show. Thanks for making time today.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Now, I want to come out right away and say that I think I have muddied the water here before our conversation even starts, because I used a kind of shorthand to tease this conversation. And I said that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau makes a profit, which, of course, in the most literal sense of the word profit, is impossible. That's not what happens. What I meant to say, and didn't, and I apologize, is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau returns more money to American consumers than it costs to run the agency. To your knowledge, is that a fairer way to say that?
That is absolutely accurate and completely
okay,
fair.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you so much. I did want to be accurate about that. Okay, I wonder, Professor, if for people who have no idea, explain to us what the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau does and why it's been such a target for this administration.
Well, I think your introduction did very well with that. It's there to make sure that lenders, all sorts of financial services providers to everyday people play by the rules and offer products that are fair. You know, a lot of people take out loans for lots of good reasons. The lenders that make those loans deserve to earn a fair profit, but a profit that's fair and not one that comes from nickel and diming people or, you know, with gotcha tricks and all sorts of all sorts of things that range for everything from just the slick sales pitches to outright fraud. And the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was put there by Congress to kind of be the cop on the beat to make sure that stuff doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. So the argument here that the White House is making, and I'm going to talk slowly for myself because this stuff is kind of complicated. The White House is arguing that this agency should not get funding because the Fed is technically operating at a loss. Can you explain that argument? I don't even understand, like, technically or legally what that means.
Okay, hopefully we're all sitting down for this, because you're right. It gets very complicated. So the idea, when Congress created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, it tried to insulate it from everyday politics. And one of the things it did is it decoupled the funding from the usual way that agencies get funded, right? And usually the way agencies get funded is we all pay taxes, and some of those taxes go to pay the agency's expenses. What Congress did is they had the funding come from the Federal Reserve and the earnings of the Federal Reserve.
Whoa.
So actually, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau doesn't cost taxpayers any money.
Wow.
So the funding comes from the Federal Reserve. And since it was created and started in 2011 until recently, everybody understood that what would happen would be that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and this is specified in the law, would ask the Federal Reserve for its annual funding, and the Federal Reserve would transfer the funds to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Now, I'm glossing over a lot of specifics. There are caps and things that limits on what the CFPB can ask for, but generally speaking, that's what would happen. And the word that the law uses is earnings of the Federal Reserve. And just in the last few months, the Trump administration has argued that earnings means profits. And the Federal Reserve does not have a or is not earning a profit, at least since 2022. Up until 2022, every year the Federal Reserve took in more than that went out its door.
Uh-huh.
But beginning in 2022, as interest rates were going up and the Federal Reserve was paying more interest expenses, there's an argument that more was going out than coming in. There are arguments going the other way. So the argument of the Trump administration and Mr. Vought is that because in beginning in 2022 and 2023, 2024, 2025, the Federal Reserve had more going out than coming in. There are no earnings
right
of the Federal Reserve. So that's in a nutshell the legal question as to what the statute means by the word earnings.
Wow. Okay, everyone, hand your papers to the front of the class, and we'll see you in homeroom. This is really interesting. Thank you for breaking that down in a way that we can understand.
I hope I did. It's as you said, it's very complicated, but that's at its most basic level, kind of the unfortunately, you have to get into what the law itself actually uses, and the word it uses is earnings, right? And so maybe another way to say this is, you know, you think about your local restaurant, right? It's got people it has to pay, your servers, the food, and all like that. Are its earnings what it has left over, or what everyone pays as they come in for their meals? That's the question. The Trump administration has taken one position on that. The district court in the District of Columbia has said, no, earnings, it means whatever comes in the front door. It's not net of expenses. And so that's where we're at the moment.
Okay. Yeah, that good. That brings us right to the right place I want to go next. So this week, this federal judge stepped in and says, you guys can't shut down this agency just by starving it to death and laying everybody off. This is an agency that exists because Congress created it. You cannot just unilaterally kill it by lack of funding or any other means. You must fund this agency. Do you think that court order will stick, and what happens if it doesn't?
Okay, this is even get more complicated.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. So, your pens and pencils.
It's hard to say whether it will stick or not. I think this case is already in the appellate court. So the case itself actually comes from the union that represents employees at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And they filed this lawsuit back in the fall. I forget exactly when, saying exactly what you're saying. The administration cannot unilaterally shut down a agency that was created by Congress. Mm-hmm. The district court issued an injunction and said, that's absolutely right. You cannot take any steps to end this agency. And so the court is going to issues that injunction. And while it continues to hear the case, that all part of the case all gets appealed. That injunction is more or less still in place. The Trump administration's position is, we're obeying the injunction. We're not taking any steps to prevent the agency or shut down the agency, but we've now decided and discovered that we can't get any funding for the agency for all the reasons we just talked about. So what happened just yesterday was the court ruled that not asking for funding is within the court's previous order saying don't take any steps to shut down the agency. By not asking for funding, you are effectively shutting down the agency.
Right.
If that makes all makes sense.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. It doesn't not make sense, but I'm just kind of trying to absorb it all and think, because we have such limited time left, and I want to make sure people kind of walk away from this conversation with something. You know, it's a holiday tomorrow, and I want to think,
right,
like, what are people going to remember about this conversation on Friday? So
You ask, is it going to continue, right? So
yeah.
I think it's pretty clear that when Congress enacts an agency, the executive branch by itself can't just shut it down. I think it's very hard to argue to the contrary.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening in this case and other cases is the procedural wranglings in the court is allowing the administration to effectively do the same thing. So even if, as this case proceeds, when you get to the end and the court says, no, you can't do any of it, can't have done any of this, if all the employees are gone, if the agency is basically kind of ceased to function,
frozen,
the administration is going to accomplish what it wanted to accomplish as a practical matter.
And what is the consequence for our listeners? What is the consequence from the consumers if the Bureau's been kind of frozen, inactive in the sort of zombie state for the better part of a year already? If that continues, what does that mean for us?
Well, it's going to mean that there's more opportunities, frankly, for people to be cheated by financial institutions. There's one less cop on the beat. There's still state attorneys general, but they're busy. They have other missions, and they can only do so much. The innovation of the CFPB was to put some resources at the federal level, and also to have a flexible agency that could adapt as the times change. Right, technology is changing the lending industry and the consumer financial industry tremendously. The CFPB had statutory tools to address that. Without the CFPB, that's all going away. So just at the end of the day, there's just going to be more opportunities for people to be cheated.
With my last moment here, Professor, I'm not going to ask you to get political, like left or right or conservative or Republican, but just from a political science standpoint, where is there a sort of toehold for anybody to argue against the existence of this agency other than bad actors? Like who could possibly object to these sort of regulations being in place except for people who want to screw us out of our money?
Well, also there was a lot that the CFPB did that was good for the industry. It provided certainty and safe harbors and things that enabled the industry, the good actors in the industry, to offer good products. I think that the argument against the agency, and it's not really an argument against the agency, but there were, as often happens in regulated industries, there were arguments about overreach. There were arguments that the CFPB had the power to go in and do what are called supervisory visits and look at books and records and try to prevent violations before they happened. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, if you're a business that has that happening to you, that's burdensome and costly, and that's where a lot of the objections were. I think those are way overblown. There was lots of examples of that supervisory process. You know, it's a conversation between the business and the agency, and a lot of examples of those supervisory visits producing good results that were good for consumers, I think good for the business. But that's where I think the hostility is coming from, and it probably comes also from just a general kind of philosophical anti-regulatory standpoint.
Okay. Well, we certainly understand that. So it's not no mystery there. We have to stop here, Professor, but this is a difficult thing to understand, but I think I understand it better, and I'm sure my listeners do too. Thank you so much for your time, your work, and your way. We'll reach back out again when this pops up in the news again next year.
No problem. I hope I've helped.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Robert Lawless is a professor in law and co-director of the Illinois Program on Law, Behavior, and Social Science at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. If you want to react to anything you just heard, the way to get in touch is, of course, the Oakenart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. I'm Ian Hoke. We'll be right back after this. Stick around. Okay, all the difficult stuff is out of the way. We're not talking about politics anymore. We're not talking about finance. We're talking about what's going to happen tonight. It's New Year's Eve. I hope you have a great time. Our listener, Steve, is texting in. He says, Coleman and Ian, if you go out tonight to ring in the new year, be aware of your surroundings, stay in a group, have fun, be safe. Happy New Year. Don't do anything you don't want your mother to know about. That's good advice. I love that part with the guitar where it goes, brit, brit, you know what I'm saying?
The plinkies?
The brit, brit.
It reminds me of that thing on The Price is Right that goes the blink, 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 blink.
Oh, they're like Plinko?
Yeah.
The little Plinkies.
Yeah, that's what it does. Blink, 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 blink.
I love this song, man. Ugh. I wish I was around in the disco era, because they got like, what's it called? I'm not going to remember the name. Oh, Solid Gold. Solid Gold is, they go around to nightclubs around town and they play like disco songs all night. So you get to dance to this music, but man, it's it's just not the same. You know, people, the bell bottoms and the suits and the platform shoes and the Quaaludes and whatever else they had going on back then.
Yeah, I don't think I can enjoy that. I need to stay somewhere past 82.
Oh, yeah?
I don't want to go anywhere past 68.
Here's a text that says, me and my wife, we give our dogs calming chews to help them deal with the fireworks. And I ask them what brand they say. It's called Thunder Ease from PetSmart. So if you have dogs that are going to flip their lid tonight, you may enjoy stopping by a PetSmart or a Petco, whatever you guys got around here. I go to the Petco in Carrollton. They know me in there. And pick up some Thunder Ease. Except those dogs. Except Coleman's neighbor's dogs. They shouldn't get Thunder Ease. They should freak out because you don't like those dogs.
Right, but then I thought about it. I think freaking out might make them, you know, leave
more
surprises.
That's what I was saying. It's like, they might evacuate on your neighbor's kitchen floor, which maybe will help your neighbor realize, you know, the error of their ways.
Real quickly, what are you running into Buc-ee's with? Did we get your answer?
Oh, what did I get out of? Oh, like what? Okay,
yeah.
I run into Buc-ee's. I got 10 seconds to run into Buc-ee's and come right back out. Club Melt.
Club Melt. All right.
And now I think some people might think, oh, the Club Melt is like not that good, but it's the last thing that I had there was the Club Melt, and it really hit the spot. Like at that exact moment, I don't think the brisket or the sliced turkey or whatever, I don't think that would have hit the spot. But the Club Melt, last time I encountered it, was exactly the right food at exactly the right time, and that's a feeling I would like to replicate in the future.
Okay, based on my limited experience at Buc-ee's, since I have zero, just people giving me stuff, I wouldn't go for the food. I go for the condiment, and that's the Scorpion hot sauce.
Boo?
The Scorpion. Somebody gave me the bottle of the Scorpion hot sauce. Yes. It was awesome. I put it on literally everything I had at home, and I ran out really within a week or so.
Well, now I know what I'm getting you next time. Hey, let's drive out to Mississippi tonight. Just go to Buc-ee's.
Go to Buc-ee's.
Happy New Year. We're going to Buc-ee's. Get in, loser. We're going to Buc-ee's. I went to the Buc-ee's in Sevierville, Tennessee, which is the second biggest Buc-ee's in the country. It used to be the biggest Buc-ee's, and then they built one in Texas.
It's not a measuring contest here, Ian.
Oh, all right. Well, I don't know. You know, my Buc-ee's is bigger than your Buc-ee's. We'll be back in just a minute. Get one more look at traffic with Courtney VIP, and then we'll hand it over to Sports Talk. Pelicans game is coming on at 5:30 on AM and FM. Stick around for that. I'll be back right after this. Don't go anywhere on WWL. Quick corrections corner here. I screwed up. I got something wrong.
What'd you do?
I always say, if I get something wrong, I want to know about it. I'm not afraid to be wrong. It's not Sevierville, Tennessee. It's Sevierville.
That's what the guy on the phone
Sevierville.
Said.
Sevierville. I mean, I looked it up. Yeah, there is some discussion about how you pronounce that, even among people who live in eastern Tennessee, but it seems like the consensus is it's Sevierville, like severe weather, Sevierville. Anyway, coming up on the show on Friday, I'll be back with you. Scoot will be back on Monday. I want to talk about why some viral branding works and why some doesn't, and how some brands get cool nicknames like Coke and others don't. So that's one thing we're going to start out with. I'm going to have another great show for you on Friday to start out 2026. So excited to start out this year with you. Please enjoy Sports Talk coming up for a hot 90 minutes. Here's the news. Thank you, Chris, Courtney, Coleman, Scoot, Diane, Dan. Love you. Happy New Year.